Verdugo back to the pin. He caught it. He took it back.
He's doing everything right now.
That ball is gone. What a bullet by Devers.
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of the TC and Company podcast. Tom Caron with you in the midst of a full-blown COVID outbreak for the Red Sox. We saw a Tuesday night really reach its peak in the middle of the game, early on in the game, after he had an RBI single in the first inning. Xander Bogaerts called off the field by Alex Cora and sent away immediately. We all knew at the moment, assumed that it was a COVID situation. And sure enough, later in the game, we got the report that he had tested positive for COVID-19. He is the seventh player taken away from the team because of COVID-19, the other six already on the COVID-related IL. Bogaerts will be placed there now and will be removed from the team, most likely for 10 days. A big blow, their best hitter, their best player, their number four cleanup hitter. The bullpen's been racked with four relievers on the COVID-related list. Now three middle infielders on the COVID-related list. You got Kike Hernandez and Christian Arroyo, who are still in Cleveland, separated from the team. Now Xander Bogaerts as well. So through it all, they're trying to beat the Tampa Bay Rays, who have won eight in a row and are the top team in the American League. And it was an ugly third inning last night. Things kind of completely fell apart. Six runs scored, only three hits, but there were errors and walks and wild pitches and hit batters. They tried a little comeback at the end. Raphael Devers got up to the plate as the tying run. But he ended it, and they couldn't pull off the comeback. Now they hope for Chris Sale to get him out of it. But last night, everybody's still reeling from another name added to the list. And after the game, Kyle Schwarber said it's nothing to mess around with.
You know, it's unfortunate. I mean, I think the biggest concern is just the health of the individuals. You know, this is no joke. It's nothing to not take serious. And, you know, you just hope that it's a light case, anything like that, that they're not feeling it super hard and that they recover quickly. And that's kind of the biggest thing that's on everyone's minds is the well-being of all the guys. You know, it's the invisible enemy. It sucks. But, you know, we have to keep moving forward and keep putting our best foot forward. You know, we're in the middle of this thing and, you know, it's the next man up mentality right now. We just got to keep moving forward.
Before that game yesterday, General Manager Brian O'Halloran joined me on Red Sox pregame show on Nesson. And I asked him point blank about the team's inability to get to the 85% threshold that Major League Baseball mandates to relax some of the protocols. They're one of six teams not at that 85% vaccination threshold, and how much that had to do with this current outbreak that's got 10 members of the team, seven players, three coaches, now quarantined and on the COVID-related IL list.
But let me ask you this simply. Does that 85% threshold play into what's happening right now? I mean, we know there were breakthrough cases. We know there were vaccinated players and people getting this. Does any of this spread right now in your mind have anything to do with whether or not the team was 85%?
No, I think the 85% thing sometimes gets its importance gets overstated. I think the most important thing is, you know, you want as many players and staff and people around the team vaccinated as possible. You know, you want to minimize, number one, you want to keep people healthy and keep the team healthy. And number two, you want to minimize missed time. So the more players and staff that are vaccinated, the better chance you have of keeping this thing at bay. But, you know, it is a personal choice for each individual. And we educated folks as best we could, and you know, people have to make informed decisions. And so I don't think it's so much about the 85% or not. It's more about you know, just we want to get as many people vaccinated as possible, and follow all the protocols and try to keep this at bay. Obviously, you know, right now we're going through a tough time overall in the last, you know, really the whole, you know, all of 2020 and up until recently this year, you know, we've been fortunate, but it's hitting us now. It's hitting us at a bad time. We just got to deal with it and try to win games.
All right. A lot to talk about, a lot to unpack, but I want to introduce a new feature we have here on the TC and Company podcast. Catching up with former NESN interns to find out what they're doing since they left NESN. And the first guest in our new series is Rob Bradford, former NESN intern, Hall of Fame NESN intern. So, Rob, what have you been doing since you left NESN?
I thought you were going to say it's a new feature, plan K in terms of guests. So, no.
All the other guests have COVID and could not appear on the show today. But here's Rob Bradford.
You know what's weird is that when I try to explain the NESN internship, it never makes me feel as old as that. The only thing that makes me feel older is getting in a water park, getting in an inner tube right before you go down the slide and the college lifeguard sitting there and you kind of sink down and you have to be pushed over. That's, I've always said, that's the oldest you feel. But for me, it was people say, well, what did you do at NESN as the intern? I said, I counted pitches. Yeah. Like, if there was only a way to do that.
We didn't have that technology yet. You were there before me. That's how long ago it was.
Yeah, it was 1990-1991. It was the Butch Hobson year. Obviously, NESN was in the bowels of Fenway Park. It was like, oh, my goodness. How awesome was it where my job during the game, I counted the pitches, the starters, but once the starters get taken out, my job was done, so I could leave and go into the park and watch the rest of the game for free. Yeah, for right. A college kid, that's pretty cool.
People have no idea. The old NESN was inside the ballpark, what is now like, I don't even know, it's like the something deck now behind third base. That used to be filled in, that was the ballpark. And you could just go sort of down the hall and come out, and you just, boom, there's Fenway Park. You're in the middle of the game.
Yeah, and they never let me up in the booth, which, like, for obvious reasons, I was too much of a menace. But they did, the one thing they did let me do was, remember Jeff Gray, the pitcher? Jeff Gray had a stroke, and I had to hold the mic for the doctor. That was my big thing.
Wow.
That's a lot of responsibility.
I have a Jeff Gray story. My first job was covering the Vermont Reds in the Eastern League when I was in college in 1985, 1986, and they were loaded because that was the team that became, you know, the Cincinnati Reds of like 90. And Jeff Gray pitched for them. So I covered Jeff Gray in Double A Eastern League.
And by the way, and
not much of a Jeff Gray story.
I know that you want this entire thing to be about Jeff Gray, but he was a good pitcher, number one. And, you know, I'm glad that he was able to come back from stroke, but also known, what was he known for when he pitched? He was the slowest pitcher in the history.
Oh my God! Yeah.
He was the standard bearer.
Yeah, he was. No. I was writing for a newspaper, the Barry Montpelier Times Argus. Shout out.
You don't have to tell.
And I don't think that it exists anymore. I would write. You'd get two paragraphs written between pitches. You know what I mean? Like, he would get the ball back, and you'd slam out a paragraph, look up, and catch the next pitch. It was beautiful. Okay, so you left NESN and you went on to do some other things. That's great.
Yeah.
Let's get back to what's happening right now with this team. It is all right. I mean, I asked Brian O'Halloran and Kyle Schwarber talked about it there. Bottom line is, how much of this is happening because the team did not reach an 85% threshold?
I don't think you can say that. I don't think it's just like, oh my goodness, these guys aren't vaccinated, so this is why these guys are getting it, because we have cases like Kike Hernandez where they're vaccinated and he gets it, right? I think the biggest thing is, what does this mean in terms of timeout? For instance, you know, especially with close contact, where if you're, it's definitive, if you're vaccinated, you do not have to go into quarantine. If you are not vaccinated and you're close contact, you have to go into quarantine for a week. And for a team and for a player, that's a big deal. Like, that's a big deal. You're sitting in a hotel room and not being able to do much of anything in the middle of the season. So I think that's a big part of it. I don't know if you agree or not, but, you know, there's a lot of other things that the 85% have impacted in terms of, interacting and getting around and doing some things that some other teams are able to do. And it's an uncomfortable, and I wish they were at that level. But in terms of this outbreak, it's hard to say.
I'm glad you said it because it kind of didn't occur. I didn't connect the two over the first couple of days, right? We started hearing names and like, I have friends who have been vaccinated and who have gotten the COVID-19 virus in the last 2 weeks. I missed the Yankee Red Sox doubleheader because I had to quarantine because I was a close contact to a vaccinated person who had gotten a breakthrough case. I was vaccinated. I did not get it, thankfully. But like last night, you know, after, and it's so visible when you see Xander Bogaerts get waved off the field, right? Just the kind of wave him through, just go in the clubhouse and get out of here. And then you have, you know, Dan Shaughnessy tweeting, you know, they totally deserve what they're getting now because they're anti-vaxxers who didn't get to 85%. And Peter Abraham wrote something similar, right? A lot of people now are saying, this team is getting what it deserves because they didn't get vaccinated. I think that's a bit of a leap here, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think Lou Maloney pointed this out. Go look at the teams that are most hard hit by this. There's a lot of teams that are 85%. There's a lot of teams that were held up as standards for being vaccinated. By the way, one of them were the Yankees. The Yankees, right? I mean, they were early on. We knew the Yankees were pretty heavily vaccinated, certainly 85%. And they were, for a while, they were the hardest hit of them all. So like I said, I mean, I think that there's other conversations to be had with the 85% thing, but I don't think this is along the lines of what you're talking about, what you said, Dan said, where like, oh, you're getting what you deserved. Because it started, the first guy that we've heard during this wave was Kike Hernandez, who is vaccinated.
Right. Yeah. And you know, you wonder where it began. I mean, Texas was in town and they had four or five guys who got it. And then this is 4 days later that this breakout starts. So you start to try to connect the dots and figure it out. But meantime, the other question is, at what point should MLB consider postponing a game? I know last night Alex Cora said there's been no talk of that at all, but you've got a third of the roster on the injured list right now.
Yeah, I think that MLB has been wildly inconsistent with a lot of things, you know, going with rules and everything else. And they've been sort of wildly inconsistent with this because let's go back. Remember, the Yankees game was postponed with the Red Sox because of COVID stuff. Well, okay. The Red Sox have gone through this stuff. Are we going to pick and choose who the players are and what positions they are? And that's it. And even go back to the first game of last year, I think Juan Soto was hit for it and they played. It just seems so random what games they're going to postpone and what games they aren't. And TC, honestly, like even when it comes to the rules, because I dug into a little bit yesterday and we talked about that how quarantine people, if they're close contact, if they're quarantined, they don't have to, I'm sorry, if they're vaccinated, they don't have to be quarantined.
Right.
But if you get COVID, there's a thing, MLB is saying this, there's a chance that vaccinated people don't have to do the 10 games.
Right.
If MLB medical people determine that you aren't going to be contagious, well, sorry, like how does that happen?
Right. Is there an MLB medical team in Cleveland right now checking Kike Hernandez and Christian Arroyo to say, I'm guessing there is not.
How do you tell this? And you know, one of the first things I remember this, remember when they first started this, and everyone's intentions were in the right place. But when they first started this, remember it was has to be players have to test, have two negative tests before they come back. Well, so when I get COVID, right? I'm like saying, I'm screaming and yelling because they're like, oh, well, you know, you have to be quarantined for 10 days. I'm like, no, I'm going to get another negative test. Like, I'm going to cut that in half. And they're like, you can very well have positive tests for 2 months. It's the 10 days. And so for them to come out and even suggest that you have to have two negative tests, and this is when we knew football was fraudulent for doing this, it doesn't happen. You can test positive for months on top of it. So
yeah, and you bring up football, which is a great point. I know you did the Greg Hill show this morning, so you've only talked about football today so far. So it's nice that we talk a little baseball. The but football does this year, right? Year two seem to have a much more clear, you get it, you're gone for this long, you don't have enough players, you forfeit the game. You know, they came out, now they've had a year to come up with that. But this is baseball's second year too. And it's still kind of, you know, we all think we know what the protocols are, but you dig into them and there's all these exceptions, as you said. There's all these exclusions. There's all, and you know, and they're going to get home Thursday night and have a third of their team either in Cleveland or Florida. And they're going to be trying to play Major League Baseball games.
But best beds in the American League at the Vannoy, though. That's
just, well, they're right. It's a great hotel. There's no doubt about that. Great room service, too. So they'll be all right.
But even yesterday, so when I was trying to get an answer to this, where you Google it, and what I found was completely different from where I ended up. So it had changed already. So the what's online was different from what they are actually telling teams. And really, for the reporter's perspective, it became difficult because we were asking and we weren't getting definitive answers. And my guess is that they weren't giving definitive answers because I think they were trying to protect who was vaccinated and who wasn't. And
well, and there's been a lot of that, right? I mean, there's been a lot of secret, and I get it. There's HIPAA violations here that you're trying to avoid, and medical information is, you know, I've talked to a couple players directly about, hey, do you want to get out there that you are or are not vaccinated? And it what I'm learning, what I'm feeling is that even the guys who are vaccinated don't want to say they are because that might make their teammates look bad. You know, there's a lot of let's band together here.
You see, it, like, as you said, this all I'm thinking about is this is why politics is baseball up until maybe last year was the least political of all the sports in the clubhouse, because when you're around in this clubhouse, in the baseball environment, you're around each other more than you're around your families. So what do? You stay away from things that might be polarizing, that might cause arguments, that might cause dissension, because you've got enough to worry about. So as you're saying that, I'm like, that makes all the sense in the world.
So you've got this, I mean, the other part of it, when you talk about MLB, and I don't want to be a half hour ripping MLB, but, you know, how did they not get the Xander Bogaerts test back before the game? Like, can't we expedite things a little bit? You're Major League Baseball. I don't want to, you know, discount the science. I know everything takes an amount of time. But you've had two straight nights now where someone's been pulled out of the game, right? Josh Taylor had to leave in the fifth inning because he was a close contact. They wear chips to determine the close contact. You know, it just took somebody a while to check the chips.
Well, and you're also talking about an organization, go back to the World Series, the last game of the year last year, right? Justin Turner, like, how does that happen? How does that happen?
And it so sneaks back out. You know?
Yeah. I think Bogaerts was hunkered down in the haunted hotel last night.
Maybe it was the ghost of the general manager Williamson.
Yeah. If you want to power, I'm telling you, if you want to power rank places to be quarantined, cities to be quarantined.
Oh, there's no doubt. Well, I don't know about cities. You're not going to see the city. It's the room. We both stayed at the Vannoy plenty. I hope they got one of those bigger expanded suites in the new wing, and they're looking out on the pool, and it's a beautiful place.
And if you're not, as long as you're not worried about the ghosts, because remember Scott Williamson, you know, Scott Williamson, like why he was playing for the Red Sox.
All right, let's tell that story real quick. It's a podcast. We got time for stories. Scott Williamson felt a hand on his back, pinning him down on the bed, and thought he looked up, and very much like you do at the end of each appearance, although I guess you've changed your signature style, but he saw somebody in a tuxedo tipping his top hat from the other side of the window.
Yes, and he was very adamant about it. I mean, this is why he's playing. This isn't like, you know, the senile old man. Like, no, this is why he's playing, saying this is definitive, this is haunted. It had a history of being haunted. Do a little research, and this might be – I had to do a book, so I guess I had to take leaps of faith. But the guy who actually sold that
– the general manager of the hotel.
Was named Williamson.
Yes.
So
I was told the same thing. Yeah. You didn't even hear it. I dropped that a minute ago. I said maybe it was the general manager Williamson before we even got to Scott Williamson.
Oh, I think that maybe it's like from Chasing Steinbrenner, but it ingrained in your brain.
Maybe that's what it is. I thought at the time I'd heard that from Scott Williamson, but I thought he went down and asked, and that's what they told him. But whatever.
Yeah, but anyway, it's not only Williamson. Like, this is known as one of the most haunted. Yeah. In terms of, you want to power rank haunted hotels in the baseball circuit, this is number one.
Oh, that's, yeah. Although, wasn't the Pfister in Milwaukee?
Oh, yeah. But that was Milwaukee. Doesn't count.
That would not be high on the power rankings of places to get stuck with COVID. But you know, so let's take this through. And by the time people hear this, we'll know more. You know, if you're listening to it after the game or during the game on Wednesday night. But you know, right away you think, oh boy, Devers is in trouble, just from a close contact perspective, right? Because he and Bogaerts are around each other all the time. You can understand why it's spreading through the bullpen. They're in close quarters all the time. Your strength and conditioning coach tested positive, and he's probably in everybody's face in a closed position. And I, by the way, I don't know if anybody else, I said this on the postgame show last night, 3 hours of a rain delay in a closed Cleveland locker room couldn't be a real good place to be if you had positive cases. They literally, I mean, it's whatever CDC says now, 15 minutes inside of 6 feet, they had to spend 3 hours in the clubhouse during a rain delay on Sunday. And now we know that a third of the team had COVID.
Yeah, and the close contact thing baffles me. And maybe you can clarify, I don't know. Like, everything's close contact. Like, what you just talked about is close contact. And I know
so CDC says, right, 15 minutes in a 24-hour period within 6 feet indoors. Which brings me to this, right? Brock Holt was on the COVID list. I don't know if it ever came out that he tested positive. I believe they said he did. I don't know. But he was on the list. And I interviewed him Saturday at Fenway for 10 minutes, which I guess isn't 15 minutes, and I guess it's outdoors. But the next day, they announce he's gone the COVID list. And I'm waiting for the phone call, you know, for contact tracing. I never heard anything.
No. Well, can I tell you also that Kike Hernandez, so we don't do a lot of in-person interviews. Kike Hernandez, I ran down the field, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, and I did an in-person interview with Kike Hernandez, right?
Of course.
So, of course, who gets the COVID first? Right. Fortunately, I had been tested the day before. He was, because my wife had some issues. But it was, we're thinking along those lines, but that's fine. I mean, I guess that's the guideline. But to your point, TC, like, oh my goodness, these guys are around each other, high-fiving, hugging, and we kind of forget about it.
Well, here's an even a simpler question, and I don't know the answer to this. Is Tropicana Field considered indoors?
I was thinking of that exact same thing.
Right?
Yeah.
If it is, they're all close contact.
Yeah, I know they're all close. Right? By the way, you know
5,000 close friends or whoever showed up last night.
I probably dropped this on you like 50 times. You know why the roof is tilted at Tropicana Field?
No.
Oh, you don't? Know, see? Look at this. I like
that's why we bring you on to learn things. Why is the roof tilted?
Air conditioning costs.
Really?
To limit the amount of space you have to air condition the place.
Is that true?
Yes.
That's incredible.
There you go.
I saw a hockey game there before it was the home of the Rays, the Devil Rays. I saw the Tampa Bay Lightning. They spent a couple of years where that was their home ice. And it was the most, but looking at it now is the most bizarre thing, because it was like the hockey rink, the sheet of ice kind of ran along the third base foul line. And they were basically, you know, so there was this cavernous stadium on 2/3 of the rink. And then it was like high school bleachers on the other side, you know? And so you were just sitting on what is now sort of the second base spot on a high school bleacher. But the other great thing is the ice didn't come all the way to the seats. So if you had the best seats in the house, there were just people walking between you and the ice the whole game, walking by.
Everyone hates the place. I love it. It's the easiest place to work. It's the biggest.
I'm cutting you off here. I always stop people who say that you love the Vinoy. You love the town. You don't love Tropicana Field. You love going to St. Pete to cover baseball.
No.
You love the experience. You don't love Tropicana Field.
I do. Because the clubhouse, you know this, the visiting clubhouse is the biggest clubhouse there is to work in. It's a great place. There's low pressure. So the players are a little bit at ease, although none of the writers talking to them who are down there, none of them are going down the field at all. They're all staying away from the players for obvious reasons. You know, so they always have great handouts, you know, where they used to give out action figures of like Joe Madden. It was great. They would have one time we were working after a game and they would have concerts, post-game concerts, like come to a baseball game and stay for the concert. But the concert was one member of Three Dog Night playing for 30 people.
Did he go as one dog night?
I don't know. There's a lot of joy to the world, and Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, I don't know. I used to love going down there to cover games. I don't know if I liked the Trop. I mean, I liked everything about it before, after. But the other great thing is whenever you be at the Trop, you'd hear this noise. You know what it was. And then you realize it's like some tropical deluge going on outside that you didn't even know. It was just banging on the roof. All right. So is this the knockout blow for the Red Sox? Last night, and these last couple of days, I thought, you know, the third inning last night, that as ugly an inning as you're going to see, right? 10 batters, 6 runs on 3 hits with a couple walks and a couple a hit batter and a 2 hit batters and a wild pitch and an error, everything you could imagine, just ugliness all around. I don't want to say quit because I don't think a team really ever quits. But I thought for the first time, all of this is getting to the team. In the third inning last night, I thought it manifested itself. Like, you know, Verdugo made the catch and looked over at J.D. Martinez and says, what happened to Bogarts? You could read his lips. I mean, they in real time, this is all falling apart on them. And I thought for the first time last night in the third inning, I said, yeah, no, there's no coming out of this.
Yeah, it's weird because on paper, I can make the case of, and I think I have on the pregame show, that they have enough, right? They have enough to stem the tide. They have the starting pitching, assuming that everything's okay with that. You know, you still have bats, even with Bogarts out, you still have bats. I mean, I think they had the second highest OPS in baseball, despite Bogarts not having a great month. So you can make the case, but there is that psychological element of it. I think you're sort of on the money where you're just saying, get through this. I will say this, the Rays are the worst team to be playing right now.
Right. Like, hold on.
Think about this. We talked about this, right? Where, yeah, you know, you won those series against Texas and Minnesota and Cleveland, but holy mackerel, what a trudge it was to do it. It was so difficult to do it. And then finally you're facing this team and it's, with all this other stuff, it doesn't feel great. And then you have the White Sox around the corner. Who else do you have? The Mariners, they're pretty decent.
Seattle. Mariners are lurking.
So we're sitting here still thinking the same thing that we're thinking at the beginning of August. Just get through the next couple of weeks. But my question is, are you going to be, probably even more so than that, are you going to be able to get through that? I don't know. Right. But, you know, I know Cora has, I was talking with, I think it was Mutt, about being around Cora and how he operates. And we've seen him just beaten down after some of these games. You could tell. But what I think he takes a lot of pride in is trying to come back the next day and make it seem like, what are you going to do? You know, we're just playing baseball. It's Alex Verdugo dress up day. Let's go get him. So, you know, he's going to keep doing that, but he's got a big old taste of what Ron Renneke went through last year, doesn't he?
By the way, we stopped and Tim Wakefield, I talked about this last night in the pregame show. Can we just one more time have Ron Renneke appreciation moment here? Because no. This is all he dealt with last year and with for a team that was out of it 10 games into the season, you know, and had a rest. I mean, every day was who's positive? Are we playing this game tonight? The other team's got an outbreak. What do we do? And AC mentioned, Cora mentioned it the other night, like what Renneke did last year just to keep this team on the field was remarkable.
Yeah. And what sucks for Cora is that you know, like he said, ever since February 10th, they've been worried about this. But still, it's human nature when you're going through a year and it's, yay, everything's great. And you go through April and May and June and July and they won't say you're overachieving, but you're achieving, right? And so you feel great about how everything's going and you feel like the COVID thing is still there, but it's really in the rearview mirror that, boom, here it comes.
Worst possible time.
That's almost worse. In a lot of ways, that's almost worse.
Yeah, so, I mean, at the end of the day, they are holding on, tied in the loss column with Oakland for the second spot. Yankees have lost 3 in a row all of a sudden, so they haven't pulled away. It's not out of the realm of possibility they can pull this off. Keep talking about those 6 games with the Orioles at the end of the season. You know, as long as you can go 7-0 in those 6 games, you know, there's nothing to worry about.
I feel like the 6 games against the Orioles are like the first 100 wins T-shirts, you know?
Right? Right?
Like,
still got the Orioles. That's a great T-shirt to sell right now for the next 2 weeks. We've still got 6 with the Orioles.
Well, if they do a great job in the Red Sox social media accounts, but if they really want to poke the bear, otherwise known as Dan, like you really want to poke the bear, put on we still have six games.
That'd be your Twitter bio. Boston Red Sox, we still have six for the Orioles.
Yeah.
That would be perfect. What do you think? They pull it off or not? Are they playing baseball after October 3rd?
Yeah, you know, I think they are. I do. And I think that and we talked about this app before yesterday is that it feels like you win a game. Okay. You get some feels back and Bogaerts is a big loss. There's no question about it, but it feels still, I mean, I keep coming back to it. This is why Chris Sale is Chris right. Sale. Right. I mean, it's, you feel a lot better about everything with Chris Sale pitching like he is pitching. And so, yeah.
And a bullpen that got reset. The only good thing that came out of the last 2 days is that you've got Chris Sale on the mound now with Garrett Whitlock, Garrett Richards, and Adam Ottavino ready to go. And basically everybody else. But they didn't manage to survive. And Ryan Brazier coming back. But, you know, they you just hope none of those guys test positive in the next 12 hours. I mean,
I just think that a win is just so important, not only because it's important because you got to win, but just to like actually make them feel like the world isn't falling on top of them.
Yeah. Tonight. I mean, it's a must win game because there are no must win games till it's a must win game, but it's pretty damn close. If Sale wins, I think they feel a lot better about things. Then you're packing up your bags and getting out of there tomorrow. You're coming home. Outdoors where you're no longer worried about close contact and going from there. So there you go. I'm with you. I still think at the end of the day, they end up with a wild card spot. I think, if they do, it'll probably be against the Yankees, which I don't care what else happened this season. If you have a one game elimination day on Tuesday, October 5th against the New York Yankees, it's going to be incredible.
Great. It's awesome. It's awesome. I don't care how you get there. I don't care where it is. It's awesome. And like I've said all along, I think that I would be fat. I've told Cora this is that just get there, man, like get there. Right. And the whole narrative about, well, you know, the playoffs are a crapshoot, the Billy Beane thing, like we saw in 2018, that isn't the case. There is some bobbing and weaving, which you have to do, which he did so well. And that game, that one game will be a perfect example of that. Like, I don't know if you're on board the Sale, Eovaldi, Houck, Whitlock. There you go. You're on your way.
Right. Yeah, Tanner Houck out of the bullpen in the playoffs would be a terrific – I mean, we've seen what he does the first two times through the order, right? I mean, he's been terrific.
Well, think about this. Let's play that game with that one game at Yankee Stadium against the Yankees. Chris Sale typically has dominated the Yankees. Nathan Eovaldi has typically dominated the Yankees, been very good at Yankee Stadium. Tanner Houck, as you said, absolute weapon. Garrett Whitlock, absolute weapon. If you can make that is a very plausible way to get through nine innings.
Absolutely. And do it a few times. So that weekend, you're going to have Mac Brown versus what am I saying? So Mac Jones versus Tom Brady, right, in week four. That's the third.
Yeah.
Right? That's October 3rd. Final game of the regular season. You might need to win that game to get in. And if you do, 48 hours to get ready for a one-game playoff against the New York Yankees.
Can we really, in terms of that, can we really, like, take 2 seconds to rant about the stupidity of the schedule? Like, how does – TC, it drives me absolute nuts. And I know there's this uneven schedule and everything, but when you have a team that is playing the most important games of the year in the last series of the year and you have to change the rules because
it's
you're
ridiculous.
Playing Washington.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
It's mind-boggling ridiculous. It's crazy.
You could have that last game of the year, Sunday in Washington, and you have to win that game, and you've got, you know, Nate Eovaldi or Eduardo Rodriguez, God forbid, trying to swing a bat.
I know that why they do it, but still, at the same time, I mean, I almost want to say to them, hey, listen, team that has least to lose – you know, you're going to have to play an away game. Yeah, I don't know. But
all right. It's been a good conversation. We appreciate you helping us fill the time. Any advice for future Nesson interns? That's really the question.
I like how you said, I appreciate you helping fill the time.
I've done this long enough. Last night in the pregame show, I don't know, Tim Wakefield, we were talking about COVID, and he gave me a really quick answer. And I thought he was going to go longer, but he didn't. And I went to break after, and he said, sorry, should I have gone long? I was like, whatever. We got to fill an hour. You want to do it this segment? You want to do it later in another segment? It's just,
I feel like my legacy at Nesson is being built on filling time, whether it was rain delays with Don Arcillo or the trade deadline shows that we did, which you are,
if we do someday, we will have the Nesson trade deadline special Hall of Fame inductions. You will be in the charter class. Because you are world class at filling time.
Well, you think, because I'm looking at it like it's a radio show, right? It's like, okay, it's 2.5 hours. But when do you ever do 2.5 hours of television?
Never. No. Never. Only in rain delays and the MLB trade deadline. Rain delays. I literally have to tell our producers, like, everything else in TV is rush, rush, rush. Yeah, you got to be done. You got to be done. Rain delays. I mean, we did 3 hours the other day.
I know. You're really good at it.
Yeah, I start talking about something and boom, here comes the video. No, slow down. Let me talk for 30 seconds, then bring in the video.
I could do rain delays. I can do trade deadlines. My weak spot might be parades. I did do the parade where, oh, yes, they're holding up the sign again. Oh, look at this scene.
Yeah, I've done a few of those. I've done all four teams. I've done parades.
You're good at it, though. I'm not.
It's just filling time. It's
by the way, intern advice. Just don't show up with paint all over yourself like I used to.
That's good advice.
Thank you.
That's good advice. Johnny Damon and I once spoke to a group of I think they were from BU broadcast students. Came to Fenway and they had a day. Sure. And so he and I spoke to him. And one of them asked Johnny what the most important advice he could give to young aspiring reporters on how to deal with players. And he said, have fresh breath, which I never really thought about. But from a player's perspective, it's probably the most important thing. If I'm going to be standing here with a microphone, I better not have bad breath.
Yeah, that's a whole nother podcast of untold stories. Yeah.
Speaking of which, go ahead, plug whatever it is you need to plug here. Your wildly popular live BP radio show on the weekends now.
Yeah, well, I'll plug the Nesson pregame show, which, you know, I always enjoy being on with you. There you go.
We enjoy your visits, and someday you'll return the favor and invite me onto your radio show, but it hasn't happened.
You have an open invitation, live.
You say that, and yet Jamai drops by frequently. Dave O'Brien voices the open. I think the receptionist at Nesson dropped by and was on the show for a while. I mean, basically everybody at Nesson except for me has been on your show.
I said to Jamai, the door's always open. He walked through the door. The door's open for you too. So
I'm not bitter about it or anything, but when you guys first announced it, the picture you put on social media had me in it. It was, because you had, was it Steve Pierce? Who did you have on the show?
Oh yeah, Steve Pierce. Yeah, it was
a picture of me and Steve Pierce at the parade. You're using my likeness. Yeah. Name, image, and likeness apparently is worth nothing.
What are you, Bob Ross?
I'm just saying I should get something. All right. It's great to talk to you. We enjoy it. We'll talk to you. When are you on the show next? I don't even know when you're on the show next.
I don't know. A couple days.
All right. It's never too far away. The great Rob Bradford, no one fills time better. And that's his new signature wave. No longer does he tip the cap, he waves. So he's the company. I'm TC. Thanks for listening to the TC and Company podcast.